Go ahead.
Hello, this is the special podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, the definitive sports video game show brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham.
What's up, PAX East 2015 Press Row Podcast? How's everybody doing? Good to see you all here. We've got a nice intimate setting. I'm excited. Hi, everybody. I'm Rich Grisham. We are here today to talk about sports video games at a crossroads. As we know, in some ways, the next generation has been very good for sports games. There are three of the top 10 in the NPD the last few years have been sports games, Madden, FIFA, and NBA 2K. There are a lot of different experiences that people get to have, whether it's single player, whether it's online, multiplayer, and a lot of these games have a longer shelf life than they used to. A lot of people play these games now year-round. There's different ways that people are experiencing them. But there are also areas of concern. There's less competition than ever. There are fewer actual titles. Many of the games are now microtransactions driven. And, of course, there has been the elimination of a lot of modes that some of us have learned to love and enjoy over the last few years. So we are here today to talk about all of those things. And joining me today is an excellent panel. Up first, we have a man, an original Episode 1 member from the Press Row Podcast, a man who is happiest when he is binge-watching The Americans and Game of Thrones while simultaneously watching the New York Rangers play, from Polygon, Mr. Sumit Sarkar. Sumit, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Up next, we have a man who has emerged as an empire-building live streamer YouTube sensation thanks to Don Bradman's cricket, from That Sports Gamer, Mr. TJ Lauerman. TJ, welcome to the show.
Finally, That Sports Gamer has come back to the Press Row Podcast. It's been multiple weeks that I've been gone, and I've received tweets from the millions and millions of followers wanting me to get back here. So thank you for having me back here, Rick.
It's Rich.
It doesn't matter what your name is.
Next, we have a man who would lift this table over his head if only if we were to defend the legacy of NFL 2K5. Yeah. From back in my play in the FitCast, Mr. Kevin Larrabee. Kevin, welcome to the show.
NFL 2K5 is the best.
And a man to many needs no introduction, whose seminal work in defining just what a video game podcast is and what it should be, and who's directly responsible for inspiring countless of other people into the medium, including me, Mr. Garnett Lee. Garnett, welcome.
Thanks, Randy.
All right, so as I mentioned, a lot to talk about today. What we're really going to talk about first is Ultimate Team. A lot of people ask me a lot about what does Ultimate Team really mean and what is it doing, how is it influencing sports games and how they are made today. So the first question I have is, has Ultimate Team actually saved big-time sports games? We know that the money, the revenue that these games generate is significant. It has changed the way that the games are sold and marketed. And Garnett Lee, I'm going to start with you. Do you think that the Ultimate Team mode and the way that they make money is actually keeping sports games around? Is that a credible theory?
Well, it's certainly keeping Electronic Arts around.
I mean, that's true, yes.
I think that the thing that stands out to me about it, it's sort of like you made something that's awesome, and then because of the scheduling necessities and the way the cycle goes, you have to make a decision on how you incorporate that into your overall game plan. And so, you know, everything we've heard about the way games get put together is sports games get put together is the pre-production cycle starts before that game's predecessor has launched. So, you know, before Madden 15 comes out, they're already pre-producing Madden 16. And that's because of the way these cycles are stuck on top of each other. You actually asked me, do I think that Ultimate Team saved? No. I mean, look, Ultimate Team didn't save them because it's not like any of these sports games are going to go anyplace. What it did do was it changed the complexion of the way sports games are made in a way that I'm not very pleased with. Because I feel like what it does is it's figured out a sort of a little bit of just a wrapper to put over modes that we should be able to expect in a full final product. I mean, we're paying $60 for a full football game. I would like to be able to have, as part of my full football game, a really rich fantasy experience. And I think that most people substitute Ultimate Team as the way they approach this fun idea of doing a fantasy team, but it's become card-driven and it's become monetization-driven, and I think that that's unfortunate, and it takes advantage of the core fans' willingness to keep, you know, keep coming back to the well in sports. And look, it's not just games. I mean, the same thing holds true in wear. How many jerseys and shirts and whatever else do you have for your favorite team? So, I mean, they know, I mean, merchandisers and marketers know you're going to be willing to spend money in that arena. And so the circular answer that I've generated here is that, no, I don't think it's saved anything. I think it's become an entire separate business of its own. And if anything, I would say, hey, take Ultimate Team out of the final product. Make it its own thing. Make it the free-to-play game it deserves to be. And let people who want to have that experience. But let $60, you know, full NFL package or full FIFA package be complete in and of itself in its own right.
So to that end, then, and I'll go to you next, Sumit, do you think that Ultimate Team and all that it brings will ultimately take over virtually all feature and function upgrades on these annual releases?
Well, I think if you look at the way Ultimate Team modes are laid out, you know, they are designed to get you to keep playing Madden or FIFA or whatever year-round. So they're, for companies like EA, a big part of the reason these modes are in there are not just to, you know, bring in money year-round, but also to just even to maintain that mind share. Because you talk about, or you always hear EA talk about things like years ago before there was Ultimate Team, people would stop playing Madden after the Super Bowl.
But wait, hold on a second. Can I interrupt? Mm-hmm. Because if that's the case, wouldn't it make more sense for it not to be monetized? Because then more participants would play and you'd have higher engagement. So what you're saying, you know, like in game design terms, is like it's an engagement tool, right? So if it's an engagement tool, why is it so heavily monetized? Because it's sort of counter purposes there.
Right. Well, I mean, like, for, I think what EA would say, I'm not defending it, I'm saying what EA would say was like, you can play it for free if you want to. You don't have to spend.
Come on, have you tried to play Ultimate Teams for free?
I have, and that's why I don't play Ultimate Team.
Right. It just, like, that's the big bummer of it, is like they built like this whole thing around Ultimate Team. There's a tremendous amount of hype around it. You go into it like thinking, oh, okay, it's free to play. Maybe I can. No, you really, you're not going to be able to successfully grind because the frustration level of it is too high.
Right. Well, but to get back to your question, Rich, I think that it is an experience that can stand on its own, and as you were saying,
that I would
agree
with.
Should stand on its own, maybe. So I don't see it taking over the development resources in the I think way that people are worried about. But what I've always been worried about with respect to Ultimate Team is that you know, not that they're dedicating more resources to it necessarily in terms of you know, where they spend their time, or that it's taking over the feature and function upgrades, but just that, like, maintaining it year round is like more of a concern for them, mm-hmm. as opposed to not even not working on other features, but just,
well, and then how many core features become you know, straddling the line between core and Ultimate Team, and then someone, you know, producer wise makes a decision that, okay, we're going to move it over into Ultimate Team because this really behooves the Ultimate Team experience more, but then now it's inside of that loop.
Well, I mean, I don't know, like, what you meant exactly by, you know, in terms of taking over, but, you know, what you're starting to see now is that mentality of microtransactions being, you know, bleeding into other modes, not
for
necessarily
sure.
development resources, but, like, you can now buy,
well, look at NBA this year,
right? Or, like,
wow,
training points in the show, like, I think that you can buy those for real money on the PlayStation Store, right?
Yep. TJ Lowerman, you are known as that Ultimate Team sports gamer guy. Right? Do you think there will be a tipping point that would mean sort of just basically throwing out, for lack of a better word, the core sports experience in favor of just a full-blown Ultimate Team?
No, that'll never happen, because that core is 90% of the people that buy the game. Maybe 10% are playing Ultimate Team. They're also, and then 10% of that is the whales that make Ultimate Team make all the money. But yeah, they're never going to cut out the rest of the modes. We might lose franchise mode at some point, just because I don't think anybody's really playing it anymore. Garnet always talked about wanting, I want a one season mode where I can take.
Oh, dude, don't even get me started on that subject. Jesus, how is that still a problem? Like, how is that still not existent? What I want to do is be able to sit down and play my favorite team in season, alongside the season, and it's just, it's unfathomable that that still just doesn't exist.
Yeah, and I think that's the way franchise should go, because not many people are playing franchise after 2 or 3 years. I mean, our press row league will play a couple years, but I don't think the normal person is sitting down there and playing after the first year, because then rosters get all messed up and stuff, and they're just going to be like, well, I'm going to just go in, start a new one, pick a new team, and go at it.
I think this question became more acute when NHL launched this year, and it did not have significant modes, but it did, of course, have Ultimate Team. That's when I started to get this question a lot more.
Well, I also think with NHL and NBA Live, particularly for EA Sports, Ultimate Team might be the only thing keeping those games afloat. Mm. So with licensing and everything and the low number of sales, Ultimate Team revenue that they're generating might be the only thing keeping those things alive. Okay.
Sports games probably cost more to develop out of the gate than any other game, because you have to pay the leagues and you have to pay the players, and it's a significant investment of money before you even start.
I'm not necessarily sure that's true, to be honest with you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, every game has its own development budget, and sure, but you know, obviously a big part of a sports game comes down to licensing from the leagues, correct? And you're right, there's an initiation cost to build up your engine and to start building out your modeling and how your game's going to work. But well, especially once you get into the cyclical nature of it, there's a tremendous amount of resources that you can reuse year over year. So, and, you know, if you're looking at this as a 3, 4, 5 year plan, then does it really cost more to develop a sports game than it does to, say, do Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3?
Yeah.
Destiny?
Yeah.
I mean, think about the price tag on Destiny. I mean, sports games? I don't know that I agree with that right off the bat.
Interesting. Another topic I get asked a lot about is, are these games too difficult? A bunch of people I work with, you know, who aren't people who play games a lot, regularly mention to me, oh, I was trying to play with my son, and just I haven't played in a few years, and it's so much, I can't do it. Kevin Larrabee, you are, certainly as a guy who loves retro games, have a lot of experience with sports games of the past. Do you think that these sports games are too difficult, that they cater too much to their core?
Well, I'll give you the example of the NBA 2K series, which I've bought every single version of NBA 2K all the way up until probably 2K12. And there was a point, maybe it was around 2K11 or 2K12, where it became a lot harder to get into that game every season. Turnovers. I mean, if you play NBA 2K and you know if you're not patient when it comes to setting up plays and playing it exactly the way they want you to play it on default difficulty, you're going to get, you know, 20 turnovers, 30 turnovers a game. And that is when the game stopped being fun to me. It ended up being like one of those situations where you need to play 6-8 hours of this game to understand its mechanics, where I played the last 12 versions of this game in the series, and now things have changed, and I can't just jump in, play as the Boston Celtics, and bring teams like Paul Pierce and Ricky Davis-led Boston Celtics to the NBA playoffs, maybe to the championship. You know, maybe get Ricky Davis, you know, All-Star, MVP award in the NBA Finals. But
no wishful thinking there.
Well, you know, Ricky Davis, one of our most beloved Boston Celtics, who, with the Cleveland Cavaliers, try to get a triple-double by shooting on his own net.
That was the best.
Not very smart, but what I'm trying to say is, I even bought like the newest one on the PS4. At a point, it's just not fun. And I was someone that would play 3-4 seasons by myself. I would want to look in the stats after every single game. I would want it to line up with what was actually going on in the NBA, because like I want that simulation experience, but I still want to have fun playing the game without getting frustrated. Like 2K14 was the one where I was playing live streaming on PS4, and I was throwing my controller, because at the end of the game, you know, I would have turnovers. I would lose control, because one turnover would lead to, you know, turnovers the next two times down the court. And it's just like, maybe this just isn't for me anymore. And that's when you said, maybe NBA Live. Like, that was a little bit easier to pick up this year. Maybe I got to check that out.
Maybe not particularly good, but easier to play.
Well, that's the problem, is I want the best video game. I want to be able to get the best video game experience, sports video game experience. But at the same time, I don't want to spend, you know, 2 hours trying to adjust all the settings to get it to my liking. I feel like they just really ramp things up, whether it was in 2K11 or 2K12, where it just got a lot harder to pick up that game and have fun with it. It just got way more complicated than it used to be.
You know, the thing of it for me, Rich, is that they've become increasingly more video game designs, which seems counterintuitive to me. Because as the power of, you know, we're in these Gen 8 consoles, they're super powerful, right? I mean, we're all in agreement that they can do amazing stuff with them. So at this point, I mean, we're all fans of sports. Like, we're not just fans of sports games. We're fans of the sports
Absolutely.
That we love.
Yeah.
And what we really want, I mean, at least what I really want, I should say, is, you know, I want to sit down and play an NFL game where my knowledge of the NFL game translates into me having fun with the game.
Yeah.
And so far, it's still a matter of my knowledge of the game being a nice anecdote while I figure out how to deal with this year's idiosyncrasies and whatever the control schemes are and whatever the control specializations, like, what do I need to key on this year? Is it going to be about my running back and juking? Is it going to be about stiff arming? Is it going to be about, running QB read options? Is that going to be overpowered? You know, what do I need to run in defense? It's not, hey, I'm geared up on a team that runs a 3-4 really well. It's like, oh, what defense really works well this year in Madden? And that to me is just such a still broken concept. It's like, all I want is for you to make a great representation of the fundamentals of these sports. The sports have been around for hundreds of, well, at least 100 years for most right. of these modern sports. Get that part right.
TJ Lowerman, same question to you, and also expanding it. How do you combine sim, because we all know so many people want sim, you know, they want that word. It's like just, you know, so many people hold it close to their heart, and yet also make it so that you can appeal to a wider group of people, you know, without it being, you know, having to take a couple of classes to play these games.
Yeah, it's funny because we're all at the age of, we started playing these games where there was 2 buttons on the controller, and then 4 buttons on the controller, and then 8 buttons on the controller, and we just kept building up and up and up. So when we play these games now, we have that whole history of, okay, this does this. Last night we were playing Tecmo Bowl, and it was, you hike the ball, you change receiver, you pass the ball. But now it's, you got to look at every single route, see what's going on. It's so much harder for a new gamer to pick up a sports game today and just jump right in. The only ones that can really do that are maybe MLB and FIFA, maybe.
The show does a great job with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, too bad you can't hit in the show.
You see, TJ, I'll give you a little bit of that, but my counter argument is that because they don't have the sim right, they can't do what would be the easiest thing, which is just, hey, you know how you know this sport? Here's how it translates to our game.
Yeah.
And because they should be complementary. Like, these two games, like, someone who's a super fan should recognize these things, but someone who's, like, a up-and-coming fan of whatever sport, so say, you know, like, 7 or 8 years ago, I got into Premier League football. And so I was really, like, super into getting into FIFA, getting into Winning 11, and none of them did the, like, hey, here's why you would want to run a 1-4-3-2, or here's how you're going to want to run your substitutions. Here's yes. why these things work.
Right.
Here's what sort of midfielder you want to play with, and here's how to, you know, mm-hmm. set up your squad based off of the player personnel you have. Those things are really critical. Or, you know, likewise, if I'm playing, you know, an NFL game, lay out for me, like, why do I want to be in this particular nickel? It's great that you have all the names for all these different nickels, but if you're not explaining like what they mean and how they're used,
right.
then it's just sort of lost on anyone but that top tier. And then the top tier goes, but you're not even simming it right.
Right. It's really great because I got the chance to see the Madden Tips guys doing some of their work while they were making some of their Winner's Kit videos. And at one point, he's like, you're going to run this play, you're going to click on this guy and make a user catch. Not because that's the right football thing to do, that's the right thing to do in Madden to make the play work.
Exactly.
Hey guys, we are going to take a moment here and talk about Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a huge deal, and that's because these are guys that will help you manage your money without spending the kind of cash that you used to have to in fees to advisors. The Press Row podcast is supported by Wealthfront. It's the automated investment service that makes it easy to invest your money the right way. Wealthfront software manages your money using investment strategies that were previously only available to the wealthiest investors for just 1/4 of the cost of using a traditional advisor. Wealthfront monitors your account 24/7, automatically rebalancing your portfolio, reinvesting dividends, and working to maximize your after-tax returns. Wealthfront is also overseen by a team of investment experts, the same experts who launched the index fund revolution and who've written some of the most important books in finance. In case you're not convinced, you should know that Wealthfront manages over $2 billion, that's with a B, in client assets, and they've saved millions of dollars on taxes for their clients. So with Wealthfront watching over your investments every day, what are you going to do with all your extra free time? So visit wealthfront.com/press to get your first $10,000 managed for free. And that is huge because, again, you know, if you used to have to pay an investment advisor just even walk in the door and, like, have them talk to you and be interested in you, you used to have a lot more than 10 grand in the bank and used to have to pay a significant amount of money. Now, you can take that $10,000 that you might have been putting in your 401k, your IRA, or your you know, just might have sitting in the bank, because if you're smart, you're saving money. You can take that $10,000 and get it managed by these really solid professional financial advisors for free. You have no risk whatsoever. So again, check out wealthfront.com/press to get your first $10,000 managed for free. Wealthfront Incorporated is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are offered through Wealthfront Brokerage Corporation, member of FINRA and SIPC. This is not a solicitation to buy or sell securities. Investing in securities involves risk, and there's the possibility of losing money. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Please visit wealthfront.com to read their full disclosure.
Smith Sarkar, is there a point in trying to appeal to a wider group, or is it actually better for these simulation sports games? Again, we're using the word simulate. We're talking about Madden. We're talking about FIFA. We're talking about NBA 2K, NHL. Actually trying to extract more out of their base and going even deeper and more complex.
Well, at a certain point, I almost say, like, oh, you can't blame them for trying to appeal to the core, because those are the people who, like Kevin, buy Madden or NBA or whatever, like, every year. Doesn't matter what the game is, they're going to put down their $60 because they love the sport, they love playing the game. But, think of Kevin's anecdote, right? Like, those people are almost aging out, in a certain way. I review these games, I play them every year, and there are, points where I feel, almost overwhelmed by, like, everything that I have to survey when I'm, like, trying to evaluate these games, and I'm just like, I don't play Madden online because I get destroyed when I play Madden online. It's not fun for me. I play with these guys because I know them and they're not jerks.
They're
jerks.
Yeah.
But they just don't game the system.
Yeah, exactly. They're not doing
too much
nano blitzes, right? Or whatever. So I think that's the thing, is that, like, they can try to keep appealing to that core, but that core dwindles over time. The amount of people who, plunk down the $60 every year. And that's why, sort of Madden sales have been kind of flat, maybe declining even a bit, because you compare it to a game like FIFA that has, the sport obviously has much more or much wider appeal around the world, but also, like, they really make a concerted effort every year to make it so that a really wide range of skill levels can play the game. And I think that's sort of the reason that you attempt to go there. And then, of course, you get the hardcore people who are like, you're dumbing it down. that's their challenge as developers to work on. And I think that the pressure on the developers is not just that challenge itself, but also from, like, the higher ups, right? Saying, like, we need to sell more copies of these games.
And that's, I'm going to keep buttoning, don't worry, Rich. And that's one of the big problems, is that we don't have games for not hardcore gamers anymore. Now we have Super Mega Baseball. That's the one not hardcore version of a sports game. And we used to have that, so you could have people that were casual players that wanted to play basketball, they could go in there and play.
What are you talking about, like Blitz and Jam?
Yeah, good games. Some of the best games ever made, well, even, people would say.
I would agree with that, yeah. Those are really good games.
Yeah, but now, if you want to play a football game, you have to play Madden.
Or if you play in these new sports games, they have, like, some of them are putting in, like, quick start modes, but then they kind of treat you like an idiot when you get into it. Like, it's so dumbed down. There is, like, no middle. At least that's what I found. That's why I still go back. I still play NFL 2K5 every year with updated rosters on my modded Xbox, because it plays great. Great tackling mechanics.
I'm with you, by the way, on that. I mean, I think it's still probably the pinnacle of at least getting all of the components the best that they've gotten them so far.
And it feels great for
it feels
like
right.
Anyone can pick it up, but it still looks like simulation football.
Yep.
And that's why I tried to go back to Madden. I'll try and play it almost every year. I'll rent it through Gamefly, but then I'm like, it's either way too easy, way too hard, and it doesn't feel like football. Like, it doesn't feel like an NFL football game, you know, to me.
Think about it this way. When you go to the training camp in Madden, you're not actually training football skills, you're training controller skills.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that right there, again, sums up, like, where the approach, to my mind, is off course. Like that training should be training me football skills, which they're then interpreted by me playing the game, not here's how you stick skill the game.
Mm-hmm. All right. Innovation or iteration. I get asked about this a lot, too. You know, innovation is a word that's easy to say and hard to describe sometimes, particularly when it comes to sports video games. Smith Sarkar, does the annual release schedule kill the ability for sport games to be truly innovative?
No.
Next question.
No. And what I'll say there is, you know, I think you hear a lot of players, or you see them in comments on websites saying, like, just take a year off and come back the next year, and if you have 2 years to make your game, it'll be, like, so much better. And, you know, that's understandable, and it's based on the thinking or the talk from developers that are like, oh, yeah, we really want to do this, but we had to cut it because we have 9 months to make this game every year. And then like a month to bug fix, and then we don't really do that sometimes. But, you know, look at a game like NHL 15, which when I asked them, in late 2013 and early 2014, I was like, oh, like, you know, how come you guys aren't launching on, PS4 and Xbox One at launch? Like, that was, you know, EA had Live, Madden, and FIFA, at the end of 2013 in November on the new consoles, and then they didn't have NHL. And, you know, they were like, the NHL developers were like, oh yeah, we really want to, you know, like take a sort of full development cycle, full year to familiarize ourselves with the hardware and, you know, almost like let everyone else be the guinea pigs. And then we'll learn from, you know, their experiences trying to ready their games for the new consoles. And then they put out a turd in NHL 15 that was like, I mean, like, it's a lot of fun to play on the ice. Like, the gameplay is really good, but it was, literally an incomplete game. And so, like, I look at that, and that really makes me think, like, even if you had more than a year to make these games, like, it wouldn't be much better.
I mean, look, every game has its production timeline. So it's up to the producing team to sit down and triage features and triage, like, what they're doing in the design and make sure that they're on the page to hit the release date. And the fact of the matter is that the way that they're triaging those design elements at this point don't line up with where we sports gaming fans would like the games to proceed. And that's why they're missing the mark. You know, I mean, they're looking at it, and many times I think they're looking for, you know, well, again, I have to sell the game this year, so what's my marketing message? Like, what can I base, how do I get you to buy FIFA this year? How do I get you to buy NBA 2K this year? How do I get you to buy Madden this year? What can I put on the box that gives you something that looks like, oh, there's something new and improved in here. Look, there's QB Cone of Vision. Awesome.
Right. Oh, Vision Cone.
Or they could put on the box, this game has half the modes it had last year.
but again, I mean, the big thing is that, like, every game has its production schedule, and I think that first of all, you walk away for a year, number one, that's just silly, because we want our new game for the season, we want the player updates, we want all those pieces, and there's never going to be a financial model where it makes sense to go through all the roster work, because the roster work is a lot of heavy lifting, and not get a financial payoff out of it. So you've got to have a product. I understand that, that's fine. But it doesn't mean that if you take a year off, all that's going to happen is you're going to have 2 years of expectations. You're still going to have the producer's still going to be sitting there looking at a long laundry list of design elements that they want in the game. They're still going to triage them. They're still going to have to make their production schedule, and they're still going to wind up with some things that don't make it in the game and some things that do. I think it's just more a matter of prioritization. And look, if you're making a new game every year, like, set yourself not just a plan for this year's version, but a plan for the version after and the version after, and say, here's where we are today in, you know, 2015, and by the time we launch our game in 2017, we want to achieve this, 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 and this.
Will innovation, in your mind, TJ Lowerman, be a full reimagining or just perhaps an iterative extension of the way that we play sports games right now?
I think it's just going to be an iterative extension every year. We're always going to hear about the 3, the 5 year, the 10 year plan for a franchise, but you're never going to get it overnight because, as we've said, it's just too much to do to a game in one release cycle. even if you take the 2 years off, you still can't really do anything. You need to look at the 3, 5, 10-year picture, because trying to do something in 9 months is almost impossible and probably almost kills most of the people that are making video games.
One of the things that is cited most often as innovation in sports game is the My Player mode in NBA 2K15, where you are one person and you interact with your coaches and your teammates, and there's cutscenes and there's decision points. Kevin Larrabee, is a story in a modern simulation sports game mode something that would get you perhaps back to the table? And do you think that is an example of the kind of experience that people really want?
Well, I think my biggest concern with sports games today is primarily making sure the initial simulation is sound. It's got to be a good playing game before they put anything else into it. Like, these additions don't really make me want to put down my $60. At the end of the day, I'm someone that is not just a sports gamer. I like to play everything that's out there. So it is not necessarily where I'm going to put in like 100 hours into NBA 2K. I might put in like 40, go through like a franchise or something like that, or, you know, go through a couple seasons. But judging by what it was last year, what I saw, not so much. Like, I don't know what they're going to tell in terms of a story. I don't know if you guys played the NBA 2K story stuff last year, but it was kind of a joke.
It was awesome in its cheesiness. That's the appeal. It's so bad, it's good, right? Like Markieff Morris staring at you, mumbling words.
Take my $60, please.
But they had the crib back in NFL 2K5. This is all going to come back to NFL 2K5. In NBA, even the NBA, they had the crib. That's all I need. I just want to go back. I want to look at my trophies. Man, you got 15 points in a game. You got a trophy up on your wall now. And look, you got awesome, like, flat screen TV.
I mean, I don't know if you guys remember the old Sony NBA. I think it was Inside Drive, maybe?
That was Microsoft.
There was a Sony NBA game during the PS2 era that had a really interesting story mode where, you know, a player comes up from a, you know, rough bringing up.
And, of course, and he did.
Has to fight. What's that?
Of course he did. He's an NBA player, right?
Fight his way up, and there's like
lost all his of cousin.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah. You know. But the core game was terrible. Like, it was just an awful, awful game. And a lot of people have cited, well, you know, people don't want story in a mode. I think you hit it on. The core game needs to be good before any of the ancillary stuff.
There's not a single sports game, and this is not developer exclusive, it's not publisher exclusive, there's not a single sports game out in the current landscape that wouldn't benefit from addition by subtraction. They're all overloaded. They're all trying to be too many things, too many people, and they're doing it at the expense of the core game experience. Like, get back. I would be so happy with the first one of these games that said, you know what we're doing? We're getting back to basics. Mm. We're getting back to the core game.
Well, it kind of feels like how it's been, particularly with Madden, right? I mean, blocking, for example, is one of the biggest improvements on the next generation. It's significantly better. It doesn't feel
really?
To me like...
Really?
Well, yes, absolutely. Did you play Madden 25 on the 360?
Yeah.
Did you play it on the PS4? It was better. I'm not saying it was perfect.
But better, I mean, exactly. It's like we're giving credit for being relatively better. I'm not there as a fan. It's like, okay. You know what? I'm at the point of, you know what? There's no reason that at this point that we can't simulate. Like, let's spend the development cycles to get that core game right. We all, as football fans, know how vitally important the line play is to everything that happens on the field.
Absolutely.
So, how is that not a top design priority? Why is it
you can't put it on the back of a box?
And that's the argument. And you know what? I've even heard that argument like several years ago from. I mean, that development team's turned over, so you know it's not. I don't think it's casting any stones at them. It's like, I heard that before, and I'm like, well, that's nuts. Because at the end of the day, making a great game is what's going to get you excitement. Like, come up with something and put it on the back of the box. I don't care.
Mm-hmm. All right. Another question I get asked a lot is, where did all my favorite games go? You know, what about, I used to love tennis and volleyball, for example. There hasn't been a top spin game or anything like that. TJ Larriman, what happened to those peripheral sports games that used to be everywhere?
I just think no one was buying them. We talk about it like we really want it, but how many people want to go out there and play a tennis game? Enough to justify going out and getting the professional tennis players to sign on and pay those guys?
How much does that cost?
They probably want money. You don't think Tiger Woods shows up in a Nike ad for free, right?
He ain't showing up in many ads.
Well, that's his own personal problems. But, yeah, you got to go out. You got to individually license all those players. And then if the one player that you want to play with isn't in the game, you're probably not going to buy the game. A lot of people didn't buy Tiger Woods because Phil Mickelson was never in it. And those people wanted to play with Phil Mickelson.
Also, arcade sports games. Again, we've talked about it. While there has been a slight, I don't know if I want to use the word resurgence, but like Super Mega Baseball is an example of a game that showed up. But again, the number of these arcade sports games is, again, shrunk dramatically. I mean, you mentioned earlier, Kevin, you know, NBA Jam and Blitz. Why don't they make these games anymore?
Well, they tried to bring Blitz back, but they didn't do it right. The NFL would not let them do late hits. They took away the prime component of what made Blitz fun. Over-top announcer was in there, but not the late hits. The NBA Jam was great on the Wii. I mean, that was a really good... I mean, it plays great on the iPhone, too, actually, yeah. Surprisingly. But maybe it's just one of those things where they didn't make enough to do it every year, and I don't think that's something that can be sustained. You can't make a Blitz 2015, Blitz 2016. And unfortunately, I mean, from what I've seen, publishers want games, they want franchises that they can pump out every single year. And that is not something that these games can do. Unfortunately.
So to that end, then, you know, because so many of us want an experience that is so in-depth and so so involved, does the next-gen hardware actually, submits our card, do you think that actually reduces the development because of all of the different aspects you have to have on the new? Is that functionally making the market smaller for these non-traditional sports games?
I think it's certainly a factor. So, you know, you ask, like, oh, why don't they make X game, you know, like tennis or volleyball or whatever. I mean, a lot of the reason is that it was cheaper to make games for the PlayStation and the PlayStation 2 and the Xbox than it is to make games for these consoles now. And, you know, for companies like EA and Take-Two, you know, they might already have the league license and the player's license. So, you know, it's not maybe a huge additional investment for them to make the bigs, right? Like, because 2K was already paying for the MLB license every year, the annual license. But, you know, when people think of, oh, you know, why doesn't EA get back into baseball? Like, even like, not even just arcade sports, but like thinking about like EA bringing back MVP baseball, which is one of the, like 2005 is like one of the greatest sports games ever made. You know, I remember asking their head of sports in 2013, and he was like, you know, the initial investment is so high and the return's not really there at this point for a baseball game, because it's not like a hugely popular video game sport. But for, and that was, you know, in 2013, we were on the cusp of the new generation. He was like, yeah, like, if we wanted to do it, we'd want to do it right. And that's like a whole new team have to spin up and like this new tech and all this other stuff. But for anybody else who wants to get into, even if you want to make like an arcade, like NFL Blitz type game, and you know, you want the league license, and you're not a company that already has it.
What about like a Mutant League? Can we get like non-licensed arcade games? Like,
yeah, I mean, sure. I mean,
we're looking at that video before the panel. Like that's a sports game I want to play. Right. I forget what it was. What was it called again?
A Super Slam Dunk Touchdown.
Yeah,
like, it's freaking awesome. I love it.
Yeah. Like,
coming to Fire TV soon.
Like, I want double dribble cutscenes for any game is going to immediately get my money. Like that, it just had, well, you're right.
What's up?
But Mutant League Football, I know, was rumored to kind of be coming back, but obviously I don't think that worked out.
I don't think it got funded, right?
No.
I'm pretty sure it did.
This is not an exclusive sports game conversation now. I mean, right. Look at the chilling effect that like this generation has had on development in general. It's, we're trying to come to grasp with how do you develop this sort of top-tier game that players expect for their new console when just the art resources alone are, again, you know, tenfold what they were on the prior generation. In the prior generation, we were already into, you know, astronomical budgets, the budget level to make those sort of, we just need, we're in this process right now throughout the business at the AAA level, especially, of trying to ascertain, like, how do you build these things and make them successful? How do you build the, you know, there's room for a Gears, of course, and a Halo, of course, and an Uncharted, of course, because those games ultimately will be super flagships. But outside of the super flagships, like what do you do? How do you possibly make a game that can be stood up next to those super flagships and carry a $60 price tag, but you know, not sell 14 million, but sell 4 million? Because you won't be successful with that.
Yeah, and I think that's why we're having like a renaissance of sports games on mobile devices, like the desert golfing, Super Stickman golf, tons of baseball games. Like
RBI baseball's back too.
RBI baseball's back this year. What else? But there's tons that there's no way they're ever going to be on a console because it would cost way more than they're ever going to spend to do that. But they can go on a mobile device. They can do one thing good if it's just hitting a 2D golf ball. You can do that on the phone perfectly, great, make a ton of money there. Why would they want to go to the console, spend way more money in development, and then try to make headway there?
Which brings us to, what about the indies? Garnet Lee, you just mentioned Super Slam Dunk Touchdown.
Super Slam Dunk Touchdown.
Love it. All right.
You guys watch out. It's awesome. It's 3-on-3.
I know,
it's like super cool. It's like one of the most cool games I've had. I mean, one of the good things about the job that I do now is I get to see all these cool indie titles that are in development. And this is one that, I mean, admittedly, I'm chasing it and working with the developer. But it's like, it's super fun, and it gets it all. It's like so smart. And it's one guy making it. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's like one guy making it.
So when it comes to...
You were going to ask me something. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no. It's part of the same conversation, which is, you know, indie games, you can have small teams or big teams, however you want to do it. But ultimately, sort of the definition of an indie is that you don't have a license. Can a sports game be successful in this market without a license?
Well, that was, I thought you were going to ask me a cool indie game question.
Okay.
You asked me a cool licensing question. without a license, can you be successful? Well, you know, you've seen different games work around that with user-generated color schemes, make your own kit, user-generated names, and that sort of answer. And that's a very fiddly answer unless you... As an indie, you approach it with a user-generated content approach. So let's say that we allow users to create all of the teams and kits and then import them into your game. So I would say, yes, it could be done if you did it smart and had the right community support.
Okay. And you were mentioning this, talking about earlier how difficult it is. What does it take, Kevin Larrabee, do you think, to crack the BidTime market? If you're an indie game maker... Not only are you dealing with the noise in, you know, the App Store or on Steam, but then you're also dealing with people who are used to a certain kind of sports game. How would a indie sports game maker generate awareness? How would you become aware of that? What would it take to crack the market?
I have no idea, because it is, maybe it's like TJ was saying, you need the game to do one thing really, really well. And the only time I ever hear about portable games is from podcasts and stuff like that. It's just so hard to look at the iTunes store and find something unless it is just in the top 50 or you hear it from someone else. I have no idea.
I mean, TJ, how do you find these non off the beaten path kind of games?
Oh, you mean like Don Bradman's Cricket? Phenomenal game. Go check it out, guys. I think the main thing is the games have to have a hook that'll get you in. Like, if Super Mega Baseball looked like what RBI Baseball looked like last year, we're not talking about that at all. But because it had a unique look and played in a unique field and crazy stuff happening around and the amazing umpire saying, "You're out." I mean, that's the stuff that you can get hooks in. But going back to the licenses, I think you need licenses for the mainstream people to know it. If I just go out and I see All-Pro Football 2K sitting next to Madden with the big NFL logo on the cover, I'm going to go towards Madden because I know what I'm getting there.
And Garnet Lee, you're in the middle of this right now. How do these indie game makers separate themselves and crack the market to where they can get noticed?
Well, I think that the spirit of the indie game that really like stands out the most, and especially is applicable to how would I make an indie sports game work, is understanding that it's about finding a really, really crystallized, amazing element of experience that you want to capture for the player, right? Think about your favorite indie games. And there are, you know, there definitely are edge cases that are, you know, super dense PC indie games or, you know, interesting tablet risks. But most of the core of the successful indie games come down to a really amazing, creative, cool idea that then gets riffed on in a number of different ways so that you have some hours of experience. So apply that now to a sport. And I'm just like, this is totally off the top of my head, so I'm going to pick basketball. Okay, Samet, what's your favorite part of watching a professional basketball game?
The last 2 minutes, because that's the only interesting part.
Okay, so let's make an indie game focused on the last 2 minutes of a basketball game. And what's cool about that? Do you like college? Do you like pro? If you like college, we can just make it down to a fouls game. Like, I could make an entire basketball game about college sports. Actually, let's make it Final Four. You play the entire 64 games in 2 hours because they're only the last 2 minutes of each game. You start, like, with different balances. It will balance it off of ranks. So if you're, like, you're the 16 seed playing the 1 seed, you're 8 points behind. There's 2 minutes left. Play the foul game.
I love it.
But that's what you have to do. I mean, it's like the indie games, like, they're not going to make a ginormous game that has everything in it, right, but they're going to find something and get it really right and make a really cool game with it.
And so exactly in the spirit of that, Samet, our indie is the best chance we have for innovation, at both of not necessarily just the game, but also the experience and the approach.
Well, I think it's tough for indies because of the main thing, like the reason they are indie is like the budgetary constraints. So, I remember talking to Metalhead Software, the people that made Super Mega Baseball, which, by the way, we've mentioned it a lot. You should all go play Super Mega Baseball. It's really great. It's like $20 on PS3, PS4, cross-buy. But, you know, they put that game out like in mid-December, which is a really weird time to launch a baseball video game. But my assumption is that, like, you know, they didn't have infinite money to keep developing that game until March, when, you know, baseball people are actually thinking about baseball, right? So, you know, it's I think really easy to assume that, like, oh yeah, you're indie, you don't have the constraints of an annual production cycle, so you can just work on a game forever. It's like, yeah, if you want to starve to death. So having said that, I think that because of because you're not a slave to a license or a particular expectation from your audience, like, you know, people who like play football, like simulation football games, like they want Madden to be Madden every year. Like they you know, it's a pretty a prescribed product in terms of the feature set and the way it plays and whatnot. But, you know, if you are an indie, you know, you can come up with a crazy concept like Garnett just did and, you know, really attempt to, you know, even if you have like 6 months, that's the only budget, or that's all you have the budget for. You have 6 months, you know, you can try to make a really cool concept into something that people will enjoy. Or, you know, even if it's not like a cool concept, if it's just like you have a really defined scope to your game, like Super Mega Baseball, where it's like, you know, it has this really cool, like, kind of kiddie aesthetic to it, but it's there's like, you know, four stadiums and like, what are like 8 or 12 teams, and it's just a really good fundamental simulation of baseball underneath it. Like, you know, you combine all those things, like it's a fairly limited scope, but they just execute really well on all of it.
All right, so we're running up against the end, so I just want to say, first of all, thank you to everybody for being here. This is always a whole lot of fun. It's great to see you guys in person. Any questions from the audience before we wrap it?
There will be prizes for people asking questions.
I think there's a microphone in the back, too, if you want to go back there.
I brought prizes of the best sports games from our past.
And use the microphone.
Yeah, there's a microphone in the back if you want to line up.
Kevin, what if I don't have a copy of, or I don't have an Xbox to play my copy of NHL 2K5?
Fire away, sir.
I was just wondering if your favorite team had ever done so bad that it turned you off from wanting to play the game the next season?
Yes.
And Rich has not played a baseball
game. I'm a fan of teams that lose almost all the time.
Yeah.
And it definitely can negatively impact my desire to play a game. Garnett, I don't know if that happened to you or not.
Well, I mean, it kind of just gets my back up. So it makes, actually, kind of almost inspires me more because I want to go fix it and be like, I'm.
Do you want a prize? Wait, you can choose between, this is easier, your first four people, choices between Tetris on the Famicom, or tennis, one of the best tennis games of all time, NFL 2K1, it is online enabled, World Series Baseball 2K1 featuring hometown favorite Pedro Martinez, and World Series Baseball 2 for the Japanese Sega Saturn with Hideo Nomo.
Awesome stuff. Ooh, love it. Yes, sir.
Congratulations. Thank you.
I just wanted to know if you guys thought that Rusty's Real Deal Baseball was the best sports game of last year and why you answered yes.
It's awesome. Love it. Rusty's Real Deal Baseball?
Oh, my God. I love Rusty's Real Deal Baseball. Rusty's Real Deal is spectacular. I play it all the time. That is a great game. If you have a 3DS and you haven't tried Rusty's Real Deal Baseball, I definitely recommend it.
Well, unfortunately, we had several other questions, but they were cut off just because of the problems with the recording. So I want to apologize to those folks who did ask the questions that we weren't able to get them into the episode. But again, I just want to reiterate, I want to thank everybody so much who came out to the panel. It was a lot of fun. I want to thank the panelists TJ Lowerman and Sumit Sarkar and Kevin Larrabee and Garnett Lee. We had a blast, and we can't wait to do it again next year at PAX East. And so thank you, everybody, for listening. We, as always, appreciate your patronage. We really thank you for listening to the show and also for supporting our sponsors. And speaking of our sponsors, I do want to mention once again that the Press Row podcast is supported by Wealthfront. It's the automated investment service that makes it easy to invest your money the right way. It automatically rebalances your portfolio and reinvests your dividends, all commission-free. It's a big deal. Wealthfront manages over $2 billion and has saved millions on taxes for its clients. So visit wealthfront.com/press to get your first $10,000 managed for free. So we thank Wealthfront. We thank all of our listeners. We thank Operation Sports. Thank you, everybody, for continuing to make the Press Row podcast everything that it is. We could not do it without you. Thanks, and we'll talk to you again next week. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Press Row podcast brought to you by Operation Sports. We ask that you please subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher and the Windows phones. We also ask that you give us a rating. That really helps us a lot. We also ask that you please follow each of our panelists on Twitter, and they are as follows. Polygon's Owen Good at Owen Good. Pasta Padre's Brian Medai at Pasta Padre. Polygon Sumit Sarkar at Sumit Sarkar. That Sports Gamer's TJ Lowerman at That Sports Gamer. US Gamer's Cat Bailey at @_CatBot. Operation Sports Chris Sanner at ChrisSNR. And Operation Sports Steve No at Steve_OS. And of course me, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham. So thank you so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate it, and we really want to thank the great people at Operation Sports for making this show happen every single week. So thanks, and we'll see you again next time.